This podcast is brought to you in part by the estate of Bob Nelson. Bob was a lover of all things San Diego and a longtime supporter of Voice of San Diego and its podcasts. We at Voice of San Diego are honored to have his support during his lifetime and continued support through his estate planning. Are you looking to engage with regional decision makers, business leaders, elected officials, and industry professionals committed to improving downtown San Diego? Join the Downtown San Diego Partnership. As a member, you'll receive access to exclusive resources, exposure to special programming, networking functions, and additional opportunities unmatched by any other local membership-based organization. Join the driving forces behind the future of downtown San Diego. For a 10% discount, become a member today.
All right, we should do this podcast. Ready?
Go.
Three.
Smodmast.
Andrew Keats, you have a story to write. Let's go.
Three, two. Welcome to the Voice of San Diego podcast in partnership with News Radio 600 Kogo. I am Scott Lewis, CEO and Editor-in-Chief at Voice of San Diego, and I'm joined, as always, by Andrew Keats, Managing Editor at Voice San Diego. What's up, Andy?
Not much, man. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. And fellow Managing Editor, Andrea Lopez Villafaña. ¿Qué pasa, Lopezita?
What's up, Lewis?
How are we?
Good. Andy, you want to know something?
Yeah.
Scott definitely. Yesterday goes, hey, do you have any nicknames? I was like... Andy? Yeah, he was right. Like, oh, yeah, it clicked.
Yeah. We could do that. Just go with Andy's. Like, the way you say it is, is who you refer to.
I would like to call her Aid, but have it be known that it's a Sopranos reference.
I would not. No.
Okay. Coming up on the show this week, another round of Will La Jolla Secede from the City of San Diego? It's underway. It may be worth taking more seriously this time. Also, the mayor had a big announcement Thursday. He wants to eradicate homeless encampments. But as we reported this week, the San Diego Police Department has a staffing crisis and it's expected to continue for years. Can they do all the things he wants them to do? We'll explain the latest cops numbers, the big announcement, and more. And finally, another crisis. The schools guide that we put out revealed some startling statistics about chronic absenteeism. Almost all schools saw declines in attendance after the pandemic, but schools facing the biggest absenteeism drops are clustered in specific areas in the city. What we know about that and don't. It's all coming up. Stay with us. Okay, so I have a few things I go off on sometimes, right? Palm trees we've talked about.
Yep.
Eucalyptus we've talked about. Well, one of the other ones is when people refer to La Jolla as its own city.
Yeah.
Like they'll be there.
That happens a lot too.
Like I think it was like last year, a little while ago, when they're like, two scientists won the Nobel Prize. One of them's from La Jolla.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah. Like let me just be clear. That person was at the UC San Diego cluster, right?
Yeah.
That area was part of Camp Matthews, which was an army base that they gave to the city of San Diego and the city gave to the University of California to form UC San Diego. The city of San Diego deserves to be recognized for the success of that institution. Or if it's going to be referenced as a geographical place, it's not La Jolla. And La Jolla doesn't even claim it.
Another one where that happens a lot is when the PGA Tour comes to Torrey Pines. And it's like, the course literally belongs to the city of San Diego.
It's
a public course owned and operated by the city of San Diego. Jackals.
And they're like, yeah, and they're like, we're here in La Jolla. We're here in La Jolla, California.
Yeah.
And then the what makes it the worst is that they have their own zip code. It's recognized as like a special geographical area by the post service.
So if you write La Jolla on a letter, it'll be delivered.
Yeah, it's the way, it's the formal way. But when people who are born in La Jolla go to get passports, they have to say they were born in La Jolla. As though you don't do that anywhere else in the city. No Barrio Logan, no City Heights, no Ocean Beach. None of that says City Heights, California. Mm-hmm. It says La Jolla, California. And so it drives me nuts. It always comes out. But now, they
that
want
could
it,
all change. They, want, you could, they could solve this problem for you.
They want it to be real.
Yeah.
And they want it to be its own city. Now, we've seen this all the time. People are like, well, we should just break La Jolla off from the city of San Diego and all its trash and bad things. Mm-hmm. They're on their way now. Or they're doing it. What did you find last week?
Well, so I started to hear last week people said, hey, are you following this La Jolla detachment issue? It's a real thing. And
is that what they call it, detachment?
They do call it detachment, not secession.
Not secession, because that has references that they might not like.
Connotations.
Yeah.
Right. Yes, it's detachment.
detachable La Jolla.
Possible Germany, detachable La Jolla. I finally said, okay, if you say so. Because my first impression was this effort comes around every 10 years.
Yes.
There's always a new generation of journalists that gets to cover it for the same.
San Diego special, you might say.
It is. Yes. It's almost, it's not quite a San Diego special. I don't know what you.
La Jolla special.
Right. I don't know how you, like either that one or like Mount Soledad. It kind of fits more in the like Mount Soledad cross.
They fixed that though,
They did
I guess.
Fix
yeah.
that one.
Yeah, but yeah, it's something, it's a perpetual story. You have to. New journalists come in and they're like, wow, that's a story. And then you're like, well,
yeah,
hold on.
But people who know things were telling me, this is real. You should really call about this. So I reached out to LAFCO.
Local Agency Formation Commission.
Yes.
Wow, nice.
Yeah, LAFCO.
So and when you have any dispute about
boundaries.
Where boundaries of cities are, or if a city wants to annex a certain area, or maybe, for instance, mm-hmm. two water districts want to break off from the San Diego County Water Authority, LAFCO makes that call.
Yeah. So as like sexy as that sounds, the reality is most often they're dealing with like irrigation districts, sewage districts, not things as high profile as La Jolla becoming its own city.
We've talked about this before, but LAFCO has one of the best Twitter feeds, or did for a while. It's pretty, it's got some voice.
If you're out there just hammering away in the salt mines in LAFCO, you might as well have some fun with your social media presence.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Wait, is it SD LAFCO?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So
they follow me. I'll follow them back.
Congratulations.
All right. Well, so I reached out to them and they said, and first words in response for the executive director from LAFCO was, you heard right. This one might have legs. So they are taking it seriously as a real option. The people who are in charge of this include lots of the community groups, the sort of public focused groups in La Jolla are part of this effort. And they are putting together a real proposal to potentially do this. Right now, where that stands is they've hired who's considered the best-in-class consultant for this type of work. They have to do a fiscal impact analysis. For detachments, right. And so this person is diving in, and essentially you have to like, it's super complicated. You can think about it for just a couple minutes. You can start imagining how insanely complex it would be to unwind all of the different things that go into a city existing, but you have a very specific boundary that mm-hmm. would be the detachment. You need to assess the property taxes on
that's
each
quite
side
a niche
of it.
To get into to be the guy who studies detachment.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine he does other sort of GIS focused things, but so they need to figure out how much of the debt associated with our infrastructure investments belongs to La Jolla, and that would be part of a make whole number that would need to come back to the city for this sorts of thing. But then you'd also need to check that against what sorts of liabilities are associated with out of date infrastructure investments and pension debts and all the costs and all the revenues associated with the whole question, which is like, there's a lot of moving parts.
Yeah. So we have paid police officers and firefighters to patrol and support that area for a long time. Mm-hmm. They have now earned and will be given pensions well into the future. Mm-hmm. What's La Jolla's obligation to pay that even if they detach? And then they still have to send their sewage through Point Loma, right? They still have to get their water through our water department. There's just like a lot of deals to be made. It's like Brexit.
Yeah.
But for a tony little village.
I mean, I'll say it. It's probably less complex than Brexit. But like...
Just a little bit.
But, you know, still very complex. So in any case, that work is going on right
now. And to be clear,
now.
They would not take UC San Diego. So mm-hmm. maybe at that point we could just say La Jolla or we could say San Diego
yeah.
when somebody succeeds at UC San Diego.
Right, right. So that work is going on right now. That'll come back. LAFCO will do its own version of that analysis and a potential different alternative scenarios. But by state law, it requires that there's like at least a 3-year revenue neutrality. So you can't have, like, this program doesn't allow for someone to just walk away significantly financially better than the city that they're leaving. It would need to be set. And LAFCO can impose additional years if you need to spread out that cost or there's difficulty getting to what that revenue neutral number, LAFCO can impose extra years on it as well.
So the whole city would have to vote to approve this unless...
There was a legislative change of some kind. Right now, if you are a city, you're part of an incorporated city, and you want to detach and become your own incorporated city, there's essentially two votes, a vote of the detaching area and a vote of the city as a whole. Both of those need to pass 50% for that to occur. So San Fernando Valley back in 2001 attempted to detach from the city of Los Angeles. The residents of the San Fernando Valley did approve it, but the residents of Los Angeles as a whole overwhelmingly did not. San Fernando Valley remains part of Los Angeles.
So
interestingly,
funny.
Though, if you're part of the unincorporated county and you want to vote to become your own city, as Encinitas did decades ago, that's one vote. You don't need a vote of the unincorporated county. There's sort of a different standard there.
Interesting. But so a legislator like Tasha Berner Horvath or somebody like that.
Yeah, Chris Ward.
Chris Ward could right. put forward a legislation that says, actually, we're going to detach La Jolla and they don't need to have a vote?
Or no, they would have to change the law that creates LAFCO that stipulates these rules. And there would have to be a legislative change that says, no, it's just one vote.
Okay.
Yeah, it's interesting. But, I talked to some of the people associated with the effort, and they're really pushing this as, like, not a winners and losers. We don't want to be part of the city of San Diego.
We just don't like you.
It's not you.
It's not you. It's fine. We just need our space.
Yeah, I think that's right. In fact, one of the things that we're telling them about is, look, right now, we get policing from the SD police department, and what would happen in this other case is we would probably contract with the city of San Diego, so we would pay for that service.
So what do they want then? They just want the cultural identity,
their own decision making standards.
Man, those council meetings. Every day or every month in the city of San Diego there's a La Jolla day where they just have to like go through like some views getting blocked or something like that, and there's all these consultants that have been hired to come fight, and just consumes a day.
I would love to hear the sort of like geographic battle lines in La Jolla.
Yeah.
Like, well, everybody knows about the north or south of Prospect Street divide.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know.
Oh, look, the Bird Rock contingent is here. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Check out more on that story at VUSD.org/Andy. Thursday, Mayor Todd Gloria joined Council Member Stephen Whitburn at the We Announce Things room at City Hall. And he said he was going to what?
That was so funny.
Yeah.
All right, so at the We Announce Things room, there was a announcement by the mayor that he was going to support Councilmember Stephen Whitburn with his proposal for a new ordinance in the city of San Diego that would ban camping on public property, quote, when shelter is available. So, and then their camping would be prohibited in parks or near schools all the time, no matter whether shelter was available or not, riverbeds, that sort of place. They also, to make sure there were places to go, they were going to announce soon, or announced plans to announce, kind of a plan to plan to announce, that they would be doing a new large safe camping spot. We've speculated, and I think it's become clear that that's going to be at Inspiration Point in Balboa Park, at that big lot.
I think what they told Lisa Halverstadt today was that they are looking at other places. That's not the only option. However, the other options are more complicated than the Inspiration Point location. But the idea, wherever it ends up, is for something between, like, say, 200 and 300 spaces for safe camping.
A slight new announcement on that end, we've talked about that before, was that instead of there being any sprung structure there, like a big tent, circus mm-hmm. tent thing, mm-hmm. that there would be just a bunch of personal tents allowed. Mm-hmm. Now, whether they would be the sort of style of like a refugee camp where they're all the same, or whether like something
bring
you
your
could
own
put
tent.
Up, yeah. I'm not sure, right? They haven't made that clear.
Yeah, at Golden Hill, when they did it at 22nd and B, it wasn't your own tents.
Right.
They were set up tents, yeah.
And they announced that they're going to be doing more safe parking spots. The city council advanced a plan for the Rose Canyon area in Claremont, correct? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then the mayor, you know, put an exclamation point on this and said, look, we're going to push this, and there's no exceptions.
Now, with this action, I intend to enact it with a place for people experiencing homelessness to go. We will propose a safe camping program that not only provides a safe place for our unsheltered population to be in their tents, but also provides a full slate of supportive services that are proven to help people end their homelessness. Now, I want to be clear. Once we have these resources in place, the answer from our homeless population can no longer be no. They cannot say no to leaving the sidewalk, or no that they prefer being on the street, or no to services and help. When we ask you to come off the street and we have a place for you to go, no is not an acceptable answer.
So one of the reporters there asked, well, what if they do say no?
Yeah, which what, good, because it's
well,
the right
here's
question.
This thing.
Yeah.
What if they still say no?
And he said he said there would be a progressive enforcement approach, which I think is what they've been talking about a little mm-hmm. bit already, which is
start with a warning.
We'll educate you first. We'll move up to more severe consequences. Yeah. And he implied that eventually you would go to jail, which would which mean it have to be a severe misdemeanor or felony, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure how that all works, but key to it, of course, would be police doing that. Now, they did address why this is even needed, but not very clearly why it's needed. They said, we need to do this because the illegal lodging ordinance that's already in existence isn't complete, it's not straightforward enough. Mm-hmm. And this is straightforward enough and makes it possible for them to enforce it. Now, Lisa asked him, well, we've been reporting on the severe staffing crisis at the city's police department. Are they going to be able to do more? And you already said camping wasn't allowed during the day, and that's clearly not been enforced or not mm-hmm. the case, or you can't enforce it. I don't know what's going on. But it's not happening. And
there are still tents.
Yes. Quite a few.
Yeah.
And he said, well, the police think they can do it.
I mean, we run into this a lot where at some point you do reach the end of what you can explain away by nice sounding words. I mean, saying you can't be here, no is no longer a viable option. You could begin with a warning. You can escalate to a citation. But ultimately, you're saying police will put people in jail if they do this. And maybe that'll happen. The history of that, going back to a previous mayor as well, has been that there isn't actually much stomach for that. Whether there's not much stomach for it, because police on the street don't think it's a useful use of their time, or because the city attorney's office doesn't think that they're going to get a conviction if they file charges, or because the person doesn't show up to court dates, or because there's an activist opposition to that sort of action. Somewhere along the line, we have continued to see encampments in this city, regardless of various announcements about the end of encampments. And I think that is still the most useful thing to keep in mind after a new announcement.
Yeah. There's a couple of immediate thoughts that come to mind. One is there's clearly an angst in the mayor's office and city council member Stephen Whitburn to do something hard, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like they're clearly responding to like, we need to crack down. We need to punish this situation, right? That it's a punitive.
I mean, I don't know that people necessarily are like in love with the idea of a punishment or a they're just saying it can't be here.
Right.
It can't be what it is now.
Yeah, like if you succeed in doing it with all carrots and no sticks, great. But I don't want to see it anymore.
Right. And like you said, I think there's probably going to be a backlash to this. What they've responded with is, no, we're going to set aside a lot of space. And I also heard that what they're going to try to put in there is some changes to making it easier for emergency shelters to start up right away. They don't have to go through the same procurement process. They don't have to go through the same neighborhood input, that sort of thing. They can just get going. So maybe there's just maybe it's what we've been talking about. Like they're truly taking it as an emergency, set aside as much space as possible, and enforce the differences, enforce the situation elsewhere, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'd be curious on this aspect of like, yeah, him answering Lisa's question, saying police think they can do it. I've been going to different community meetings, officers talking to residents, and basically the messages are hands are tied. You know, we're only doing so much. We're understaffed, and you really got to talk to your politicians. Like they're the ones who need to do something. And I'm just curious to see how that message of police think they can do it will actually translate.
That's interesting. So you're going to these meetings, and the police are saying we can't do more. Yeah. Our hands are tied.
Yeah, we don't have staff.
And then the mayor is saying they say they can do it.
Well, one question is if some of these changes are the untying
of the hands. Yeah.
And that's the big question is this straightforward enough? Does it happen? Now, underneath all of this is a political reason for doing this.
Yeah.
We reported, was it like 6 months ago now, that former Mayor Kevin Faulkner was going to try to follow the lead of Sacramento, where they put a ballot measure up that did something of the sort, right? They banned camping in the city if there was shelter available, and it demanded the city increase shelter available. And he wanted to do something similar in San Diego. He's been rumored to be considering another run for mayor, and the mayor is clearly trying to get out ahead of that. There was one part of the press conference that the mayor, Todd Gloria, put out where he said, we're also going to do a ballot measure to clean things up with regard to these rules. I think his actual quote on that was, let me just read this straight up. I'll be putting forward a ballot measure in 2024 that builds on Councilmember Whitburn's efforts to address unsafe encampments. It will help untie our hands when it comes to addressing the impacts of homelessness in San Diego's quality of life and enable us to streamline our efforts to quickly stand up homeless shelters to get people off the street. So maybe that's the procurement effort we talked about.
Also, right there in the language, untie our hands. Yeah.
So it's the untie our hands measure?
I guess so.
That's too long.
Be careful with that because, you know, when you coin a term, the thing takes off like wildfire.
Conveydium. Sometimes it doesn't.
What has been your most spectacular failure as a coinage?
No, they've all done well.
I don't know what else I expected. Conveydium was pretty good, though. I got to give it up for Conveydium.
That might have been my best contribution to the culture.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah, well, when the actual elected officials started just saying it as if that was like a real word that was in dictionaries and stuff.
I glow.
Without explanation. They didn't even say like, by that I mean, like,
no.
It was just like, we've got a Convadium announcement tomorrow.
I was glowing when that happened.
Yeah.
He's glowing now, just remembering.
I peaked like 8 years ago.
It was more like 13.
Now, what Lisa Halverstadt found this week was that this police staffing crisis we were just talking about, it's going to last for a while. Like, they don't have any idea how to make it up, right? So all this stuff we're doing about police response times, about the public not feeling like they can report a crime. You had your car stolen, and they're like, yeah, good luck.
They told me that I should go look around the neighborhood for any Ring cameras. Because otherwise, like, I got to do that.
Yeah.
To go see if any of the neighbors had one. And then somebody did. And, you know, because I, like, have a mustache or whatever. She didn't want to answer the door. So I tried to call the police and be like, hey, like, there is one. You were right that I think it's probably got the theft on tape. And I couldn't even get somebody on the phone to come ask on my account to get the footage. So that was just gone. But luckily, Highway Patrol found the car.
Well, we've been trashed. Reporting about tons no of stories CCR like either. This. There was that guy in Mission Bay Park who felt like, does this mean I just need to arm myself now? Because yeah. There's no response to an obvious violent incident that's happening nearby. And yeah, it seems like the staffing crisis is, there's no plan, right?
I mean, to somewhat address some of the issues that they say, you know, could be handled maybe by civilians. So hiring civilians to do some of the work that is slowing down officers who maybe could be in the field, right? So
like probably like taking my call to say, like, hey, the Ring camera is here. Like that might not need a sworn officer to take that phone call.
Yeah.
Also, like they mentioned like PRA requests and stuff like that. I mean, if I'm honest, that all sounds like maybe there's a good argument for doing that, but it's going to be pretty marginal to the overall issue.
Seems like maybe they just don't like PRA requests.
Yeah.
That we're talking about public records and they'd rather
not do
sometimes
it.
Not
yeah.
provide public records.
Yeah, I think that there was like an IBA report that basically was looking at the issue of police overtime budget, which they blow through basically every year. They use it to backfill when there is an understaffed department. They, you know, people serve overtime in areas that aren't theirs to sort of beef up the staffing level. And the IBA's analysis said, like, that's going to continue happening for at least the next 4 or 5 years unless a certain recruitment versus, you know, new hires versus attrition standard was met. And, like, they're not even at that standard right now. Mm. So, like, if we met the standard that they laid out for the next 4 or 5 years, we could consider not having to use overtime to backfill staffing issues, but we're not even there right now. Mm. So that didn't sound like the most optimistic scenario. Mm.
You can see that full story and more of Lisa's work at vosd.org/Lisa.
We're going to take a quick break. Stay with us.
Are you looking to engage with regional decision makers, business leaders, elected officials, and industry professionals committed to improving downtown San Diego? Join the Downtown San Diego Partnership. As a member, you'll receive access to exclusive resources, exposure to special programming, networking functions, and additional opportunities unmatched by any other local membership-based organization. Join the driving forces behind the future of downtown San Diego. For a 10% discount, become a member today.
We put out the Parents Guide to San Diego Schools, a wonderful,
product. Yeah,
thank you.
All over it.
Our only printed product.
Yes, the original Beautiful. Mobile technology. So when you open it up, though, this time, and you look at all the 700-plus schools that are in there, you're going to see a couple things. One is that all the test scores are down. It's dark. It's a little bleak. Mm-hmm. But you can also see that the chronic absenteeism number, which we included two times ago, I think, and have still put it in there. It used to be a good measure of a school, whether a school felt safe or not, whether, you know, there was just a cultural problem perhaps at the school as far as leadership, you know, morale and all that.
It's a climate proxy.
Right.
Yeah.
And it used to be like if you had a school with like 20% chronic absentee level, like you were talking about a place that needed some attention. Now there are schools in the 60s, in the 70s. Now all the schools, almost all the schools, it seems like in the guide show a chronic absentee level that is just bonkers.
Right.
However, a couple of things on that. Obviously, there was, you know, you can't shut down schools and start them back up. It's like a vast, you know, power grid of a country. You can't just turn it off and turn it back on or something. You know, it's just a
desal plant.
Yeah. And so, like, obviously, we will deal with the fallout and the problems of shutting down schools forever. I mean, it'll be a long time before that sort of memory. It's like when there's a traffic accident and, you know, they clear up the traffic accident, but the traffic jam is still there for a long time. Like, there's still going to be a memory of what happened in the system for a long time. But that said, there are some schools where the chronic absenteeism was a lot higher than in others. And it's along predictable historical disadvantaged standards, right? So R. Jacob McQuinney found that 15 San Diego Unified schools had some of the worst chronic absenteeism numbers, and 14 of them were south of the 8 freeway, and a lot of them right in the same cluster.
Yeah. Same zip code.
Same zip code. There was, of those 14, 11 were south of the 94, and 7 were in the zip code 92113, which includes Barrio Logan, Logan Heights, extends all the way to Lincoln Park, and happens to be my zip code. So yeah, that's pretty sad. And including from those 7 schools, 10 schools in that zip code, are only one was having rates that were lower than the average for the school district for chronic absenteeism.
Yeah, so he went a little further this week in his Learning Curve newsletter and tried to understand, you know, he talked to somebody at the new high school, the new, what's it, Logan Memorial, they call it now, mm-hmm. and asked why it was so bad there. They built the new campus. You might remember Memorial Prep. We did a lot of reporting on several years ago. They've rebuilt the entire area. And asked him, and he was like, well, look, there's a lot of people here who lost people in the pandemic, who have respiratory, you know, chronic respiratory illnesses like asthma because of the pollution in the area, like the idea of being out during a respiratory disease epidemic is, you know, was a problem. And so there's going to be that. And then there's also just, there's just a lot of things working against him, it felt like.
I found all of the explanations offered totally compelling,
yeah,
and, you know, make intuitive sense about what families in those areas are going through. What was frustrating is I don't know what you do with that in terms of addressing the chronic absenteeism problem besides, you know, spend decades unwinding the legacy that we've created with how we built our cities, the socioeconomic realities that we live with currently, the level of trust and concern, the sort of hours that need that families need to work, and what the resulting decision making looks like because of that. I mean, none of those really assign a sort of natural policy answer. And I didn't hear much in the way of a natural policy answer from the district or any of these specific schools about what they're going to do about how bad they are, even just making things incrementally better at the very least.
Yeah, so Richard Barrera was quoted in the stories. He's the trustee for the area for San Diego Unified, one of the 5 elected trustees on the school board. And he was like clearly upset about it, but he didn't offer much as far as what they were doing, right?
Yeah, he said it was beyond what he or anyone in the district has ever experienced, and mostly acknowledging, you know, how bad it was, but
and like it's unacceptable and all mm-hmm. that stuff, but still there's no like
how do you fix this?
Yeah.
Immediately. Mm-hmm. I guess you. Yeah.
I mean, it's an old story in education, right? Where you there are certain realities that you can measure, that you can describe, and are real, and the explanations for why those are there are big. You know, they're bigger than the school system. They're bigger than the city. And while you can be open to those things and it's true, nonetheless, in short of something else, it sort of implies that we just have to live with it in the interim.
You know, the other day I was at an event and in Barrio Logan, and they were talking about homelessness and the crisis. And the guy from PATH, the organization that reaches out and gets people into homes, he was like, well, we do not have enough shelter beds for the number of people who have expressed interest in shelter. And it was one of those things where I was like, how do we just live with that fact, right? How do we just like, how is that not just like blaring and you know, a big sign at City Hall, like flashing when that's going on, when that's happening? And same thing here. Like, how is this not just like doing violence to our conscience every day about the state of schools? You know, it's just like, it's just there. It's just it's fact. It's very hard. Well, a lot of that information and more is in the Parents Guide. You can go to vosd.org/schools and check it out. We've got a ton of great feedback. It seems to be flying off the shelves and people want it badly. We have 1,000 new people who have signed up for The Learning Curve, our newsletter about education. You can join them at vosd.org/learningcurve. But 1,000 people signed up to get the school's guide who weren't already in our system, and now they're interested in getting this, one of our most successful products as far as getting it out there. People are really dying for information about this world, and very proud to give it out. And you've been, and we've been out in the community mm-hmm. talking to some folks, and they're really into it.
It's fascinating. I mean, this was my first time editing the guide and being a part of, you know, putting the guide together. And going to these workshops, it's so interesting listening to all the questions that parents have and just how complex this system is that, you know, really smart individuals just have such a tremendously hard time navigating and just, you know, asking us all types of questions that, you know, should be easy to.
Yeah, it's to incredible find. Like how hard you have to work to be good at healthcare and education. Mm-hmm. Like you have to be a real advocate. And then by the time you figure it out, like whatever crisis you face is past or whatever mm-hmm. your kids are graduated or whatever. But check it out again, vosd.org/schools.
Thanks for listening to the Voice of San Diego podcast, the most popular public affairs podcast in San Diego. Subscribe to The Morning Report, our most popular newsletter, at vosd.org/morning. I'm Andrea Lopez-Villafana, managing editor at Voice of San Diego. Scott Lewis is CEO and editor-in-chief. Andrew Keats is also managing editor. Nate John is our producer. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.